foreign policy and the State of the Union address? Not much. If you didn't listen carefully, you wouldn't have heard this.
In Pakistan, Al-Qaeda's leadership is under more pressure than at any point since 2001. Their leaders and operatives are being removed from the battlefield. Their safe havens are shrinking. And we've sent a message from the Afghan border to the Arabian Peninsula to all parts of the globe. We will not relent, we will not waver, and we will defeat you.
The president says Al-Qaeda is feeling the pressure along with the Taliban, but what about Pakistan? Perhaps the pressure is even greater there. This week, suicide bombers set off explosives to disrupt services by thousands of Shiite worshippers who were marking the end of a 40-day mourning period for the sect's most beloved saint. Those attacks killed 12. In Lahore and Karachi, most of the dead were policemen challenging the bombers before they could reach the most crowded places. There's also been that assassination of the governor of Punjab over his views on religious issues. BBC reporter and frequent guest here on The Takeaway, Hugh Sykes, has been traveling around the country this week to get a sense of the mood of how much pressure the regime, such as it is in Pakistan, is under. Welcome back to The Takeaway, Hugh.
Hello, John. Good morning. Rather good evening here. The sun's just going down over the Pakistan capital, Islamabad.
And are the people of Pakistan feeling the pressure that the government and security officials and the military even is feeling to hold the place together?
It's difficult because it's glass half full, glass half empty. The bad news dominates the newspapers and the television stations here, of which there are many now, many 24-hour news stations. And there is quite a lot of bad news, but there's a population of 170 million people. So a lot of people go about their daily lives completely unaware of any of this violence. And the things that concern them much more are inflation, the falling value of the Pakistan rupee, incessant power cuts, the unreliability of the water supply and things like that. So there is violence, but there's also intense deprivation, and that preoccupies people.
And that deprivation, I think, comes from some of the political battles over food subsidies, over fuel subsidies that have dogged the civilian government and really brought it to the brink of collapse.
Yes, and mixed into that the appalling levels of corruption here. I mean, for example, billions of dollars have flowed into Pakistan in order to produce flood relief. And there are still millions, literally millions, of people who were displaced by the terrible flood 6 months ago who are still living in temporary shelters. All this adds up to a kind of daily litany of bad news. And I've been to see a family here in Islamabad, to see a middle-class family, a very kind of westernized English-speaking family, to see what they think about this constant backdrop to their lives. They are Makbul Shah, who's a banker, his wife Shaina Shah, who's a local newspaper reporter for The News newspaper, Khalida, a nurse who worked for 18 years in the United Kingdom. She has a British passport. And her father, retired Colonel Masood Akhtar Sheikh. Khalida says she wants to get out of here. And here's what Shaina told me.
No matter how immune you become to acts of terrorism, every new act has its impact on you. And more so it affects our children. I feel sorry for my 12-year-old daughter who is growing in such an environment. They are confined to their schools and they have no outings and no entertainment. And, you know, there's a constant shadow of fear under which we are living.
Of course, you know, there's lots of English speakers in South Asia. We should remind people of that. But I think there's a temptation to suggest that a middle class family with Western educations is not typical of everyone in Pakistan. How do you translate this sense of disillusionment broadly across the population?
Again, as I said just now, I think the most important way in which this is translated across the population is not so much the shadow of fear that Shaina was talking about, because they spend a lot of time in front of the TV and reading the papers. It's that shadow of poverty which really affects people. And that gets to the core of it, I think, because the two are very interlinked. Many people here say there is an absolutely direct relationship between the constant failure to address poverty here and the eruption of violence in some places. Now, not all poor people are violent, but deep, relentless poverty can provide the circumstances in which violence can flourish. So I asked Makbul Shah, the banker, an essential question about all this. Okay, what happens if the situation doesn't change, if somebody doesn't come forward?
There's going to be a revolution. You see, if you start pushing people who are already downtrodden, who are hungry, who don't have shelter, you push them, there's a limit. Eventually, they're going to stand up because they have to die anyways. So you'd rather, you know, put up a fight and die.
And in many ways, people have begun that revolution, at least in their own minds, in the sense that it's an every person for themselves kind of attitude in a lot of places in Pakistan.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Terrible examples of people taking the law into their own hands. In Karachi, for instance, it's quite common now for a crowd to chase after an armed robber, a burglar, somebody who's stolen fruit from a fruit stall even, and if they catch him, they basically just tear him to pieces, lynch him and kill him in public. And that's an indication of all sorts of things: huge anger, total lack of confidence in the police and all the rest of it. Revolution, well, I don't think revolution is very likely here. I've just spent the day, interestingly, at the madrasa over near Peshawar, where the father of the Taliban, Maulana Samiul Haq, teaches his students the essentially peaceful message of Islam, as he put it. And I said to him, do you think there's going to be a revolution? He said, if there is one, it must only be a peaceful revolution. And another very devout Muslim is the colonel in this family here in Islamabad, Colonel Masood Akhtar Sheikh. I asked him, does he think, like Makbul, that revolution is round the corner here in Pakistan?
I don't think we have reached that stage, because people are so much crushed that they are worried about their own subsistence, their own existence.
I beg to differ. See what is happening in Karachi. People have taken law into their own hands. They've started burning people now. Every time that they get hold of a culprit, if they grab this man, there are incidents lately, they've burned them to death on the road in front of the people.
An argument over whether people burning in Karachi means it's revolution or not. I mean, that is so telling, Hugh Sykes.
Yes, absolutely. I just think there has to be a breaking point here. 170 million people, total failure to address poverty, terribly small sums of money invested in education, which in effect, essentially also drives a lot of people here who are poor, can't afford to feed their children, can't afford to pay school fees, so they send their children to the madrasas where many of them are indoctrinated with negative versions of Islam.
And radicalization is possible. And, of course, we haven't even talked about the war across the border in Afghanistan, a distant flicker of conflict there, yes?
Yes, it seems distant, but of course it's ever-present. I think it's interesting. President Bush is probably right that Al-Qaeda are being squeezed.
Obama. We have a new president here.
What did I say?
You said Bush.
I'm so sorry.
It's all right.
President Obama, I apologize. Look, the problem that still remains is that the Afghan Taliban, who are killing Americans, are being given safe haven here in Pakistan.
Indeed.
With the full knowledge of the authorities.
Hugh Sykes, we'll try to get a response to that apology from the president before the end of the program. BBC correspondent in Pakistan, thanks so much.
I'm so sorry.
We're looking for all kinds of reaction to the president's State of the Union. You know how to reach us, 877-869-8253. I'm John Huckenberry. Celeste Headlee is out. This is The Takeaway.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.